And our guest today on the program, Shelley Warzynski. She is with the 4-H program, program coordinator, and Sheila Eisler-Mashke, the council president for 4-H. We're going to be talking about 4-H. They've got some things coming up and also about the program in general. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That's right.
I guess the first thing to talk about for us city slickers who have no concept, what is 4-H?
4-H is the youth development program out of Michigan State University. We are open to 5 to 19-year-olds as of their birth date as of January 1st. We have lots of different programming that teaches life skills and youth, and our program is primarily ran by adult 4-H volunteers who have gone through a training to become a 4-H volunteer. But we have different programs such as livestock, sewing, crafts, food, all sorts of projects of that nature, and they all instill life skills in our youth. So.
And the 4-H stands for something, I assume?
Head, heart. Hands
and health.
That's good, because we were thinking maybe it was hats and haberdasheries and other things, but nope, it's more good stuff.
More good stuff.
The kids that get involved, do they generally do the same program, or is it designed to be certain interests, have different programs available? So, because kids have a variety of interests in their lives.
Absolutely, which makes 4-H a great opportunity for everybody. 4-H is built around them. They bring an interest to us, and we find a volunteer that has the expertise, or they can also find the volunteer as well. But really, they make it their own experience. So whatever interest they have, we make sure we meet their goal.
And what do they basically do? I mean, are they supposed to have tangible projects you can see? Is it supposed to be more of just a learning experience? Is there a test at the end? Something
Ooh.
Like that?
Sort of. Well, 4-H is a year-round program, and so our year starts in September, and obviously it goes through. But the programs and projects that they do, we hope that they learn life skills such as responsibility of making the project, or they learn a new skill, or some people do livestock, which any project actually would fit in this category, but the profit and loss as well, so we get a little financial education in there, and hands-on working and communication skills, all sorts of things. So like I said, it's really built around them and what their interest is.
I also understand you have some programs for handicapped students that so everybody can get involved in some way or another, even if you can't wrestle a bull.
Absolutely, because I can't wrestle a bull, and I managed to be in 4-H. But we're open to everyone, and we do have a specific program, our 4-H Proud Equestrian Participant Program, and it's ran by all volunteers and all of the volunteers' horses, matter of fact.
Yes.
But it's a therapeutic horseback riding program, and currently we've got about 25 youth and adults enrolled in the program, and they really have a great transformation in body formation and skills and muscle building, and we've even gotten some youth to talk after not being able to talk for years, getting on that horse and having a caring adult volunteer. We've got them to talk, so it's been a great program.
We're talking words, not just screaming.
We're talking words, major words. So
right. Those types of things.
Yep, they've really got a connection that's opened them up.
I imagine with that type of program, you need close coordination with the parents and with maybe their doctor to make sure no harm is going to come, because the whole idea is to make it a positive.
Absolutely. This program is definitely based on the doctor's recommendation, and we have a woman, or right now we have a woman. She's the instructor. She's been trained, and so we definitely have to make sure it's safe for everybody and lots of volunteers to help the riders.
And that's a program that we always need volunteers. So if anybody is looking for, you know, want to spend some time with horses, maybe you love horses or love working with challenged youth, excellent program to work with, and we always need volunteers in that program.
Is that because there's more of a one-on-one need?
Yeah,
as far
every kid that rides needs a sidewalker and a leader for the horse, and sometimes you need two sidewalkers, somebody to ride with the child, and a leader for the horse. So sometimes you're looking at 4 volunteers per student, depending on their level, and their skill level. So it is a program that really needs a lot of volunteerism, and the more we can get, the better. And youth can volunteer At 13, you can start sidewalking and stuff at 13 in that program. So any youth in 4-H that wants community service, or if you're doing some school project where you need some community service, perfect opportunity.
How often do 4-H programs meet? Is this something, a weekly thing? Is there a mandate that you have to have so many meetings? Because obviously you want to make sure the program is going to have some benefit, yet you don't want it to become an everyday classroom type of thing.
Absolutely. Our programming committees, which are our overall guiding committees of the program, such as our Horse and Pony, our 4-H Council, they meet about once a month, and mm-hmm. they develop programming for the youth as a whole. And then our clubs, we encourage them to meet at least 3 times a year, which is very minimal, so we want them to meet as often as they can, just so they can learn the skill and get the communication going and meet some new people. And so we definitely want them to stay active.
I imagine some of the clubs are maybe a little more seasonal.
Yes.
And yeah. you can't mandate them to meet in the summer if they're doing, you know, snowmobiling.
Right, exactly. Correct.
Maybe in Michigan you can. I don't know. It depends on how the
you might be able to meet this afternoon, by understanding.
Yes, it's changing as the day goes on. It's Michigan. Give it 5 minutes.
That's right.
Is 4-H a Michigan, a national, international organization?
It's primarily international. We've got programs in every state across the U.S. We do international exchanges with Japan, Russia, Poland, and so we're very well known worldwide. We're proud of that.
And is it more of a rural thing, or would people be surprised that there are some urban areas that might have a 4-H program or two out there?
Oh, definitely. I think they would be very surprised. And the projects differ, you know, we're rural, so we're much more into agriculture and livestock. And so our traditional programs look more like ours do, but our newer non-traditional have skateboarding clubs, that kind of thing. So, yep, they'd be surprised what's out there.
And it's a good thing for the kids. They learn social skills. They learn how to organize. They learn how to be there on time. All those things that parents want their teenagers to do is required in these types of programs.
Exactly.
How long has 4-H been around?
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I've heard of this, you know, when I was a kid, you know, those eons ago.
1905.
Wow.
And the first state to have 4-H was Ohio, and they started with tomatoes, growing tomatoes.
That was the first club in
yes.
the first state?
Mm-hmm. Why not corn or something? They're kind of by the corn belt,
yeah,
but maybe
you've
tomatoes.
Gone to Michigan State or Michigan, mm-hmm. Ohio, they grow tomatoes.
Yeah.
And it's blossomed from there, I take
yes,
it, from
absolutely.
All over the country?
Yep, absolutely.
Does the program locally generally have to be self-sufficient as far as funding and such? I mean, do you get some help from 4-H nationally? It seems like usually the organization would be something you'd almost have to support a little bit just mm-hmm. to keep it going for the main materials, yeah. and then you do your local.
Our governing body is obviously Michigan State University. That's where the program comes from. So they help fund us. The local county commissioners help fund us. And we do a lot of fundraising throughout the year to keep our programs going. And we've got one coming up.
We're going to be talking
yeah.
about that one. You also do a lot at the fair, don't you?
Yep, we do. That's kind of when you mentioned earlier, is there a final test?
The fair is the final test.
Kids have a great opportunity to work on their projects all year round and enter them at the fair and get them judged. And most of them all take home big blue ribbons. So.
And there's a wide variety of things to do at the fair now, too. I mean, it's just not your projects. We have a whole communication arts section where you can do speeches and, you know, presentations at the fair, not just your sewing project or your baking goods. You know, it's evolving as we go. So it's quite an experience.
Do you have to almost, I mean, maybe you don't work hand in hand, but do you almost have to coordinate with some of the other groups out there, FFA and such, so you're not duplicating things? Because you want to give, I guess, the broadest availability to kids.
Right. And we do. Our local fair board, the Huron County Community Fair Board, they do a great job with coordinating the fair. They're the hosts of the fair, and they invite 4-H to participate at the fair. Mm-hmm. They invite FFA members to participate in the fair. So we try to work hand in hand with them to meet the needs of both of us and try not to duplicate our programming as much and rather because work together as a team.
Because funding isn't finite. It's finite now. I mean, it isn't just thrown at you anymore. You want to get the biggest bang for your buck, and I'm sure somewhere in Lansing, they want you to account for how big of a bang of a buck you got the end of the season. So most organizations that fund usually like to at least get a good report about the return.
Yep, absolutely.
Is the local 4-H effort holding its own? Are we growing? Are we, because, you know, it seems like the schools keep losing students. Is 4-H still kind of holding its own?
We're holding our own. We're growing slightly in the last couple of years. We've grown slightly, and so we're going to continue to hopefully do that as we increase our programming and offer a wider range of activities for our youth to do.
But wouldn't statistically that mean you're growing pretty good as the schools are losing students? You're gaining, so you're getting a bigger percentage
Absolutely.
Of the students coming in to participate.
Yep, and I think what's happening is our youth are getting involved, and they're telling their friends are telling their friends, and it's pretty much word of mouth and the hands-on activities that are getting our youth numbers back up.
I also think that 4-H is only a $10 a year participation fee. That is with a cap of $30 per family. So if you have four or five children, it's only $30 for your kids to participate in 4-H for an entire year. And I think that draws a lot of families, too, especially, you know, some of these families that, you know, hockey's a sport that kids like to play, but it's expensive to play. There's a lot of gear involved. There's a lot of expense. And so this is something where they can maybe direct their kids. They can still learn those life skills, but not cost the parents an arm and a leg, you know, to participate in.
Absolutely. So, and then, that $10 goes right back into programming. So they're getting a pretty good bang for your buck, as you might say.
Well, I say that a lot.
I know. I just stole it from you.
You mentioned the fair. Is that the end? Is it, or do some of the kids go on to further competition in other things? Many of the organizations seem to have state conventions, and then they go to national conventions, sometimes international. Is there a stepping stone that the kids can keep going?
Yeah, they can if they choose, and they do well enough, and they earn. We make the state competitions kind of a year-round activity as well, so they've got to earn points and excel throughout the year in order to even qualify for a state show, and so that's definitely an opportunity. Sheila knows a little bit about the horse state show that we've sent youth to this year.
Yes, we sent seven youth to the state horse show. Basically, they show at our local shows all summer, our county shows, and gain points in the top seven, which is the number of delegates we can send, are able to go to the state competition and participate at state. And we have done very well in the past. The girls that went this time, I think they brought home, I don't know, half a dozen ribbons, which is pretty good considering you're competing against the best of Michigan. So that was really good. I mean, we've had in the past, we've had some kids take top honors in classes. It's been a great experience for those kids that go to state. I mean, it's a whole new ball game there, and it's great honor to be able to participate at that level.
Does the competitions focus more on the student, and you use the example of the horse show, than on the animal? Because, you know, the animal can be beautiful. And, you know, that just doesn't seem like it's a fair thing to the next person who has an animal who's nice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, is it more about how they handle the animal, or
yes.
how they move it around, how they are in control, how they
yes.
present themselves as confident, these types of things? Is this more of what they're looking for?
Yes. There is a portion of the judging on the animal, but it's a lot on how is the animal presented. Is it groomed sufficiently? I mean, what has the participant done to their animal to make it look good or present well? And the majority of, say, a Western equitation class, equitation is based on the rider's ability. So how is the rider riding, and how are they making the horse move? I mean, is it a flawless? Can you see that they have to kick the horse to get it to go forward, or is it just a natural-looking experience? Because that's what you're looking for. You want the person on the ground not to have any clue that you just gave your horse four cues to make it do something. That's the goal.
The goal is to make it look easy.
Yeah,
when
it
really isn't.
Correct.
And is there then some showmanship in how the student themselves present themselves.
Yes.
How they figure on their attire. You know, they're not up to their hips and cow dung and stuff. You know, these
Correct.
Types of things.
There's a whole list in the 4-H handbook goes through, and it tells you in a Western equitation class how much is on the horse and how much is on each part. You know, the rider, the presentation, what they look like, grooming skill, you know, different things like that. It gives you a list. I mean, it pretty much tells you what they're going to be looking for. So if you follow the guidelines, you should do all right.
Yeah, so, obviously, if you're getting ribbons back, you're doing okay.
Yep.
You just can't, you know, sometimes a horse is a horse and does what they darn well want
exactly.
to do. And there's not much you can do about that. And then in that case, I imagine it's the reaction of the student, how they cope and how they end up trying to make it look good, even if it isn't a perfect thing in the judge's eyes. And all of that comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes on to be more of like life experiences about how to do things right, how to make sure to practice, to do all these things that we need to know in life to do things that are exceptional.
Right. And you just talked about coping. That's a huge one. Great life skill. How do you deal with the unexpected? And when you're dealing with livestock and animals and, you know, riding horses and stuff, you have to kind of expect the unexpected. But what happens is, you know, how do you react to it? You know, that's where you learn the life skill. Okay, you just need to, my horse just did something really not good, but I'll have to be calm. What do I do to fix it? You know, where do I go from here? And that's a really good skill. I mean, that you can take through life. Okay, you know, deer jumps out in front of you, what, you know, stay calm, what do, you know, go through your steps. You know, just anything life-wise, that really is a great opportunity to learn some of those things in a somewhat controlled environment, which is kind of nice.
You know, with like the horses, it would seem you'd almost have to live on a farm or have a horse of your own. It isn't like something you could just borrow somebody's. You got to work with this animal a long, long time. Is that basically how these types of programs have to be run? You actually have a horse, or are there people out there who have a number of horses that allow you to come and ride them? Because they like to have the horses ridden, too.
Mm-hmm.
Those horses have to stay properly trained and broke and not go wild again.
Correct. There is a lot of, you know, a lot of people obviously own their own horses, but there's a lot of horses out there that are leased for the summer, and we have a lot of owners that are willing to let children use their horses, lease their horses out. You know, you have to come and ride the horse, you have to come and clean stalls, and you have to help out, but we do have quite a number of great volunteers and families out there that are willing to, you know, sort of farm out their horse for a child for the summer to, you know, for them to have these experiences and do some of the things they may not have normally been able to do.
Because this is not like, you know, joining band and getting a clarinet. That's a horse.
Correct. It's a little more involved than a clarinet.
When you lose the clarinet, that's one thing. When you lose a horse, we might have some problems.
That's a call to the radio station.
Okay. How many kids do you have in 4-H in Huron County approximately this time?
We have right around 700, 720, right in that range. So
and are all schools participating? Is this pretty much around the county thing?
Yes, definitely. We've got kids from all over the county. And
Is that how you kind of work it, so that, you know, you don't necessarily want to have a kid from Harbor Beach drive to Sebring to get to a club? You do the best you can, but I imagine certain specialty clubs, you have to go where it's at.
Yeah, we try and have them in kind of each a club where they're located, or find them a club that's near them, just so they don't have to ride all over the county to participate. But it is up to them which club they want to be a part of and what meets their interests and goals.
Do you have to keep club sizes a certain way? It seems like if you get too many, the experience will be diminished because the leaders won't have enough time to give you the individual that you need.
Right. We encourage that the minimal size of a club is 3 or more families. But as far as the maximum size, the more youth you have, the more volunteers that you're really going to need, and just safety of our youth and our volunteers. So the bigger club, the more volunteers, the more recruiting.
Okay. And how many leaders do you have helping out? Is that a problem? Can you use more? I mean,
always.
Usually.
They can always use warm bodies.
Because you have, you know, people go out of town, people, and you still have needs that need to be met, and you need qualified people to do that, and not everybody, you know, can handle horses, but maybe they can handle other things that go on.
Paperwork.
Yeah. Oh, that again.
I mean, no paperwork. That's not going to get anybody.
That's going to bring them in droves, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah. 4-H is primarily, obviously, ran by volunteers, so the more the merrier. But it is a process. We do make you do some paperwork, go through a background check, come in and do an orientation and an interview with myself. And so it's not bad. As long as you're good, I can pass you.
Because most people realize now when you're dealing with an organization that is so close to kids, you have to be careful. I mean, we have a lot of good people in the area, but you still have to be careful. It's a national policy, I would assume.
Yep, absolutely.
And, you know, you just have to go through the procedures and go through the checks. And once it's done, you have the paperwork that you need, then the rest can go on.
Yep.
Is that a long process? I mean, if you need somebody right away, is that something that's going to still take a couple of weeks, a month to get done?
It's not a long process at all. I normally do a training once a month, but if we need to change the date, we can always do that or do one-on-one. I like to do groups, but I can also do one-on-one trainings. But then it gives them, you know, what can I help them with and what do I need from them? And we can go back and forth as to make sure that they're prepared for this too, because sometimes it's a commitment and sometimes it sounds fun on the outside, and then you get in, and you're like, oh, my goodness, too many kids. How am I going to deal with this? It's getting stressful. And we never want to wear out a volunteer. We want to make sure that their needs are met and that they're happy with our organization. So it gives us a good time to sit down. And
most volunteers have probably been parents. They're kind of used to the noise.
Yeah. Yep. And they're like, so this might not be a vacation that they thought sometimes.
But it can be a good experience for the leader and the student.
Yep, and too, I hear from a lot of volunteers that they're reliving their childhood. They're actually learning more by helping out youth and experiencing new things. So it's an awesome opportunity for both.
Now, how is 4-H, you know, funded locally? Do you basically have some major fundraisers that you deal with through the year? Is that kind of how you get the core of the programs going? I mean, you mentioned you get support from MSU, you get mm-hmm. some support from the commissioners, but everybody's having leaner times, and programs do anything but get reduced in cost as far as your costs go. So do you do more and more fundraisers trying to bring in the extra bucks to keep it just $30 max per family?
Yep, we definitely do throughout the year. And those fundraisers, we do all sorts of fundraisers, and they help kids go on trips. We help give out college scholarships, send them to out-of-county trainings and stuff.
So camp.
We do 4-H camp. So we're always looking for just some ways to reduce the youth's costs so we can get them involved without being too much of a burden. So, but one that we have coming up is the Horse and Pony.
Yep, the Horse and Pony program is having a all-you-can-eat soup, salad, and dessert day November 17th. It's from 11 to 7. It's
not made with horse and ponies, is
it? No. We're having chili.
That's a specialty soup.
Yeah, which we don't make. We're having chili and chicken noodle soup is what we're serving. And the desserts are all, you know,
fantastic.
all over the place. Homemade desserts of all varieties, I'm sure. It was quite a success last year. It's 11 to 7 on Saturday, and it 5 and over, $6, 4 and under, eat for free.
And it's where?
At the Expo Center, here in County Expo Center.
At the fairgrounds off of Soper Road there. Stop in. And
We're going to have one of our parents is doing a raffle and donating the money back to 4-H. So there'll be other things going on during the day. Got some really cool prizes out there, raffle prizes and stuff. And just, it should be a fun day for everyone. All the proceeds are going back into the Horse and Pony program to send our kids to state. There's a fee involved at the state level. And we are paying that fee for the students. You know, programming, clinics. There's just a number of things that we do all throughout the year. And this money is just going to go back supporting those programs.
Is there going to be information there if people are interested in becoming maybe a leader, or if they have kids who may want to get into 4-H? Is you're going to have information there that they can have the meal, they can support 4-H, and then find out if there's something in it for them and their family?
Yes, yes. We will have, Shelley has a great display that we usually put out and information on leaders' roles and what 4-H provides for students and kids and activities and stuff that 4-H does, and we'll have all that information there. We also are selling cookbooks for the council. 4-H has their own cookbook, and we sell plat books as a fundraiser too for council. So those will be available on Saturday also.
So have a good meal, pick up some information,
yep.
and you want people to come from all over, even if they're in Sanilac or Tuscola County. They can
get
an idea what programs might be available in their counties by seeing what you have to offer. I mean, it's individual to each county, but still, we're pretty much the top three counties of the thumb here. We've got a lot that's
similar. Well, we do have, you can be involved in a 4-H club in Huron County and Tuscola. If you live, like, say, Cass City, where you're on the line and you want to come participate in our fair and our stuff, that's not a problem. You can do that.
Districts cross the county lines.
So. Yes, and then, you know, we allow pretty much anybody to be involved in 4-H. It doesn't matter where you live. So.
And how early do you start them? Do you, your high school, some junior high, do you get a little even lower than that just to start getting them in the mood?
Five. We go down to five to 8 year olds are our clover buds. They're our special group.
Are they more in, say, the end of the school day at the school rather than parents driving them all around, or does it depend on what activity they're going into?
Pretty much depends on the activity and what you're doing with your 5 to 8 year olds. We have a really good program, Projects Galore. Very, very nice representation of 5 to 8 year olds there, and they do little workshops, and they create little projects that they can take to fair, and that's in March. And I think last year that was our biggest group, was our 5 to 8 year olds, and they had 15 or 20 of them. I mean, it was a lot of 5 to 8 year olds in one room.
Yeah, well, now you know what the teachers go through.
Yeah.
And again, if people want more information, they can come to the event this Saturday.
Absolutely.
Or I imagine they can contact the MSU office. I imagine you have stuff online as well.
Yes, we do. We have a Facebook page, the Huron County 4-H Youth Development. And so we are always posting new things on there, deadlines, new opportunities. So they can look us up there, and they can always stop by and talk to us in person.
If you're not familiar, you can probably Google 4-H Facebook. Mm-hmm. It'll probably take you right there and see what's going on and maybe become a part of the organization.
Absolutely.
Been going on since, 1905?
Yeah, 05 was that.
Not here in Huron County, but in Ohio, you know, where they have tomatoes. And and do they still do a tomato thing there? Has anybody ever researched that?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Tomatoes are still a project, so.
Oh, they are?
Yep, vegetables. Mm-hmm. You can grow your own garden. Bring your vegetables.
I mean, that might be a heritage club down
exactly.
there. Exactly. One of the originals. And anyway, tell them again about the event this coming Saturday, when it's going to be and where, so people want to take part.
Okay, the Horse and Pony Program is having a soup and salad and dessert fundraiser on Saturday at the Huron County Expo Center from 11 to 7. It's $6, all you can eat. 5 and over is $6, and 4 and under eat for free.
Very good. Okay. I wish you a good turnout, and I hope more and more kids start participating in 4-H, get the numbers even higher, and give you more paperwork.
There you go.
There's got to be a downside to it somewhere.
Maybe I can farm that out as a project for some kids.
There you
how to do
go.
Paperwork. It's like homework.
Yeah.
They love that. They love that.
Computers.
Yes.
You want to get them stuck on computers.
There you go.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having
you.
Us.
Our guests today on the program have been Shelley Warzynski with the Huron County 4-H. She's the Huron County 4-H Program Coordinator, and also Sheila Eisler-Mashke. She's the Council President for 4-H in Huron County. Again, the event coming up this Saturday, the Huron Expo Center. You want to be around the hours?
11 to 7.
And coming up the top of the hour, we'll clue you in on the latest in the news.